What is going on, guys? This is Brendan Burns, and welcome to the Brendan Burns Show. Join me as I interview, dissect, and share the stories of high performers who have created the life that they deserve on their terms. I sit down with speakers, professional athletes, and successful entrepreneurs from all over the world who have chosen to live a life of fulfillment and joy over status and money. In each episode, I share actionable strategies that you can implement in your life, plus inspiration along the way. So come join me for this episode of The Brendan Burns Show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of The Brendan Burns Show. Joining us today are Drs. James and Deborah Rouse. Dr. James has a deep passion for inspiring wellness and empowering individuals to lead their best lives. He has dedicated his career to helping people achieve vibrant health, balanced living, and a renewed sense of purpose. Dr. James is a highly respected naturopathic doctor and an engaging educator who has touched the lives of countless individuals seeking to enhance their physical, mental, and emotional well-being. His extensive knowledge combined with a compassionate approach has made him a sought-after speaker, author, and consultant in the field of functional medicine and human performance. James is a seasoned entrepreneur whose companies and brands have sold over $400 million in products in the wellness space. He has presented across the world alongside luminaries, including Deepak Chopra, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and business leaders Richard Branson and Steve Wozniak. Dr. Deborah Rouse is a naturopathic doctor, an accomplished author, researcher, entrepreneur in integrative nutrition and women's health, mother of two amazing daughters, and married for over 30 years to her beloved James. Her work has graced the pages of renowned publications. Beyond her professional success, Deborah finds fulfillment in outdoor activities like hiking, tennis, biking, and skiing, and she's a certified yoga instructor as well. Her true passion lies in helping others discover self-care and inner wisdom to lead a joyful life. Drs. James and Deborah Rouse, welcome to the Brendan Burns Show.
Thank you, Brendan.
Brendan,
so
we're
nice of you to have us.
We're so psyched to be here. Thanks for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. My only question from those bios, Deborah, is you mentioned tennis. No pickleball in there?
Oh, you know what? I think I edited it after I sent you that bio to definitely include pickleball.
She's a badass pickleball player, Brendan. So that should be the top of her bio.
I was going to say, let's talk pickleball for a minute. Yeah. I've kind of gotten obsessed myself, but we can come back to that. Anyway, guys, it's so great to have you on the show. Obviously, there's so many different directions we can go, but I think we had been talking about your relationship and your marriage. What kind of brought that up, and do you guys feel like is worth highlighting and something we should dig into today?
Yeah, sweetheart.
What brought that up? I think what brought that up is we just celebrated, actually this past summer, our 30th wedding anniversary. And in terms of just our personal history, we didn't have that as examples growing up. And we honestly don't know that many couples who have that, who share that many years of marriage. And so that we've been asking ourselves, like, oh, well, that's really fun and really cool. And we still really like each other and actually love hanging out together. So, well, how did that happen? And how did we get this far?
Exactly. And Brendan, it's interesting. You know, we've been working with you for a couple months now, and you've helped us to really kind of reflect, almost objectively look at ourselves and go, wow, we do have something pretty magical and unique. And, you know, and it's interesting. I think it's helped me as Deborah's husband to not be afraid to be that much more excited about what it is that we have. You get into 20, 25, 30 years of being together, you can easily find yourself almost not taking things for granted, but just allowing things to be like, oh yeah, this is just who we are and I'm grateful for it. But I think you've helped to kind of raise my awareness of how unique what we have really is. And at the same time, giving me an opportunity to pause and be more reflective over these last few weeks since we knew we were going to be on your show. You know, the thing that I really want to make sure people know about us is that we really have done work. We've done a lot of work. We fell in love fairly blissfully, like most people do. And we had a number of good years of kind of the honeymoon experience. And then the work began, and it wasn't easy. And I think the thing that we've learned about each other is that when things do get hard or when things have been hard, we lean into work versus lean away from each other when the work happens. And I think that's been one of our greatest testimonials that helps us with hope, with faith, with trust. And that, you know, I think spiritual people who work together, build business together, raise families together, we all want to do our personal work, but it's wonderfully interesting when you're actually doing personal work that integrates with someone that you love, someone that you're partnered with, someone that you truly do hold as the great teacher in your life that you're doing along the work side of.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that you guys had to navigate, whether it was individually or as a couple together, to repair or strengthen when those challenges came up?
I think it really was about working on ourselves and coming from whatever our past childhood issues or trauma, or call it what you will. And when James and I met, it was at a time when we were very like financially strapped. We're full-time students. We had so much on our plates that anything that was like really stressing us out was easy to kind of blame on the other person or take out on the other person. But when we stepped aside to really work on our own self-care, self-awareness, and whatever like wasn't resonating individually, then it enabled us to come back together and like really recognize the good in the other person. Like, oh my gosh, wow, they're amazing. They're really working on themselves. And I see how that's really improving our relationship. And I think that's because it was really just those stressful years early on when, you know, there was not trouble in the marriage, but when you're questioning things like, oh, is this sustainable? Like, this is really hard right now. But what was really hard was just the circumstance. And that, like, for me personally, like I was had some issues within myself that I wasn't happy with. And I was projecting that onto the relationship, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. James, what were some of the things, or maybe one kind of bigger thing that you brought into the marriage that was kind of your own stuff that you needed to clean up?
I think there was probably three major things, Brendan. I've done a lot of work, I'm sure you have as well, and probably a lot of your community, around childhood trauma and how childhood trauma affects us in ways, all different kinds of ways. Certainly dysregulates our nervous system, really, really impacts our willingness to trust and really give yourself openly to trust. And I think the third thing is worthiness. Worthiness of actually feeling like you deserve to have love. You deserve to have the kind of relationship that I think a lot of us who grew up in homes that are dysfunctional, different things that happened in my family, lots of divorces, alcoholism, addiction, violence, all of that was my childhood home. And so I came to that relationship, and the way I kind of did my work, Brendan, is I wanted to be a rescuer. Like, my whole goal as a kid was try to get my parents to play nice, see if I could actually be the peacemaker, which I failed at. But I found in my teenage years and in my 20s, I just wanted to make other people, I wanted to rescue others, which when my rescue work was done, I felt like my work was done. But my big issue was the fact that I hadn't really loved myself. And my worthiness issues really came into being where I realized Deborah didn't need my rescuing. She needed me to be more whole, not having her complete me, but helping me to realize in this relationship, it was safe to do my work. And I think in so many times in relationships, you know, the romantic ideas, like when someone says, was it Jerry Maguire, like, you make me want to be, no, that was a good line. When Jack Nicholson said, as good as it gets, you make me want to be a better person,
better man,
better man.
Right.
I love that versus you complete me. Those are two different distinctions.
Yeah, that was Jerry Maguire, yeah.
Right? And that's the Jerry Maguire, that you complete me. I really felt like I wanted to have that Jerry Maguire thing, but I realized that was very dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And that was around my worthiness issues, my rescuer, avatar. And then it really came down to, wow, this is a safe place being with this woman in this relationship to finally do my work, reclaim myself, find myself. And know that it was safe to do the work right alongside of somebody, which I think all of us in this community, which you have, which is people all doing work on themselves. They're building their businesses. They're working on themselves as personal development. It's all these things. And then you bring the element of spirituality, which I think is just our willingness to look inside and compassionately find the areas that need healing and love ourselves into the healing experience. If you get a chance to do it alongside of somebody, that is pure gold.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. I want to ask Deborah, was there anything that kind of you did while James was kind of on that process that you would recommend wives or partners do that they can support their James, but not do the work for them? Kind of how James, you know, talk about the rescuer, the fixer. So Deborah, instead of kind of doing it for
him, that's funny. Like in the Enneagram, I'm a two, which is the helper. Right. So, and with my childhood stuff, like, yeah, I'm like a natural motherer. And what I had to recognize is like, it took a minute. I'm not his mom. Like, I don't need to be his mom and like do things for him or figure things out for him. And so that was also like both of us having to step away from those traditional roles and really, okay, well, I want to work on that part of myself. And I don't know, it's like very beautiful the way it unraveled, because as James said, like our agreement and coming together in our marriage was a spiritual marriage, and you can call it's not like a certain religion, or it's not an indoctrination into some different kind of contract, but it was a spiritual contract, I think, that we made with each other, but also with ourselves, like this commitment to our own personal spiritual growth. And if we weren't doing that because I was trying to mother him and he's trying to rescue me, it was finally recognizing, like you said, like, wait, a true partnership is based on coming in as your best self. And I don't care if that's in like a romantic relationship or a business partnership, like you got to show up. You can't just expect the other person to be doing the bulk of the work. You really got to come in whole yourself and doing your best. And I love that you brought in the movie lines. I never thought about that, but that's such a great, if you've seen both of those movies, like, yeah, that really says it all.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brendan, I think some of the things that we've learned working alongside of you too has been helpful in the sense that, you know, in relationship, whether it's coaching, business, marriage, partnership of all kinds, you know, your duty is to do your work, to do your work. And I think self-awareness, self-compassion, self-acceptance, all of these things are kind of buzzwords or buzz phrases in the space that, of personal development. But when you really give yourself permission to create rituals in your life that help you to do the work, and I think that really is something where I think that show it's an element of love that we've learned after 30 years that I know Deborah's doing her work every single day. I know I'm doing my work. And when we come together, there's an element of trust in the sense that we know each other well enough that we've done the work that so we can have a great time together. We can build an awesome business together. We can raise our children in a way that's very aspirational and very honest and very congruent. But it's because we separately do our work, so when we're integrated, there's a beautiful power that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. When you look at your background first, James, coming from a home of divorce, addiction, and alcoholism, what enabled you and how did you wind up breaking free from that background when maybe you have siblings who haven't been able to, or your dad didn't break free from his previous generation? Like, what enabled you to get out of that cycle?
You know, I think a lot of us in spiritual circles, we've heard a lot about the dark night of the soul. I had my dark night of the soul. I had to look long and hard at all the areas of my life that were broken. And I also looked at the preview of coming attractions. The thing we do, I think, when we go to a movie as kids, they show the preview of coming attractions. I looked at my family of origin story, Brendan, and I knew unless I didn't change, that I really, really was going to take off my own shackles of my family history and do the deep work, I probably wouldn't be here in front of you today. And I mean that sincerely. I was so deep in my addiction. I was so dark in my depression. I was so lost that I had to literally pull myself completely out of that environment and immerse myself in other addiction. I became an Iron Man. I went to the Himalayas to climb big mountains. I replaced alcohol and drugs with physicality. It wasn't just Iron Man, it was double Iron Man's. It wasn't just the Himalayas, it was the highest mountains in the Himalayas. And then I kind of burned out trying to get myself to love myself that way. And then I finally landed and sat still long enough to realize, oh my God, you must really want to be here. So what does that look like if you want to enjoy being here, if you want to love being here? And that's when my spiritual practice really took hold, Brendan. And thank goodness it happened a few years before I met Deborah, although I wasn't, I still had a lot of work to do when I met Deborah. And thank God she created a safe environment with me where I could continue to do my work. So we're never done doing the work, ever.
Yeah. No, I heard someone say this analogy once, which is switching from alcoholism to another addictive behavior is like switching lounge chairs on the Titanic.
Buddy, I was just running into new icebergs, Tiger. That was totally my jam. But if, you know, and I think there's different levels of addiction, right? Like someone say, well, doing Ironman's a whole lot better than drinking two cases of beer. No doubt. But it was the same punishment I was doing it for.
But you could also make an argument, though. I mean, so orthorexia is the addiction of excessive working out and stuff like this. Yeah. I mean, like let's say you just do triple Ironmans too frequently, that could actually cause more damage to your bones and your organs and all these things than alcohol. So it's ironic how anything in excess can actually be bad for you, including things that are good for you, like exercise.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And as someone who's been, you know, working in performance medicine for 30 years, I've worked with world-class athletes, professional franchises, Red Sox, different people like that. And man, I've worked around people who have all kinds of origin stories. But the most beautiful thing is, I think, in back-end relationship is when you do find an environment, a person, a community, a beloved that holds you to your level of awareness, that you actually realize you can unpack these things and then fully enjoy having a wholeness around your self-care versus an obsession around your self-care or a scorecard that every single day you're grading yourself based on how much you did or didn't do. And then did you earn your love based on the scorecard and how that turned out?
Yeah, that's good. I want to ask Deborah now, what did you do that was most helpful as you were working through some of the things from your past so that you could show up well in this marriage?
You know, I think for me, it started with reading self-help books, honestly, in undergraduate. I also started going to like an Al-Anon or adult children of alcoholics support group. And I could really get where my codependent nature was coming from. And then also like James, I was always really interested in nutrition and fitness. So, you know, at 13, I'm going to little aerobics classes by myself in LA. And then I was always like a sporty athletic tom girl kid. And then a gym person. So throughout high school, I moved to this tiny town in North Idaho when I was in high school. I drove 25 miles after school to go to a gym and work out. So I think I also was into those healthy behaviors. I would, and also seeking spirituality. So I was always a seeker, and I would be that person after, you know, partying all night on a Saturday, get up early to go for a run and then go to a church or find a new church or find a new community. I was always seeking. So very similar in just looking for, I wasn't punishing my body like James was. I was just working out. But I would do it like James, regardless of the night that I had beforehand. And then also being a spiritual seeker, and whether it was seeking, you know, every religion and meditation group and spirituality, always curious. And that definitely resonated when we first came together. I think we were both in that seeking mindset. And ironically, I think we told you our origin story of meeting. We definitely met in school, but the reason that we really met and connected was because out of the city of Portland, Oregon, which isn't a small city, we were both at the same gym before it opened in the parking lot, waiting for the doors to open. It probably opened at what, 5?
We were there at 4:45. I pulled in and I'm getting my game face on for the workout. And religiously, Brendan, I would look to the left within a couple minutes. Deb would pull in and I'd be like, oh my God, like, who is this person who's here at quarter of five?
I think she's in my class.
And it wasn't even like one time, it was every single morning. And you know, those are things that you don't want to, that's not usual. There's only two people in the entire parking lot. It's quarter of five in the morning and it's this girl.
Wow. So who made the first move?
Oh, him for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Well, actually, we were
that's the beauty of the tiger move right there.
I would recommend if it really built on friendship. We, because of that gym connection, we just were like, okay, I really like this person. James, there was only like five men and 25 or 30 women in our class. I would say, you know, it's definitely a higher woman to man ratio. And honestly, James and I were both in relationships when we started this program. And so not looking for sure. And so we just became really close friends, best friends, even back in the, you know, landline days, we would talk on the phone and that was it. That was that. And then, when we decided, like my partner who was still in California wasn't going to be moving to Portland, and I was there for 5 years, that we basically break up. And James and I had a dinner date scheduled, but it was just a dinner, normal friends kind of thing. But he says, what'd you say?
I said, that could be our first date.
And our then there's first this real long, date.
This long pause, Brendan. Which you could, like, she was horrified. Like, date uses a D word. Oh my gosh.
like the night would go any differently, but when you put the word on there,
it changes
everything. The energy, all of a sudden it becomes something that has, you know, a weight to it.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. And that was a Friday night. We spent the entire weekend together, went to church that Sunday. And that is a whole nother funny story. But then, like, we moved in together three months later.
We were engaged 3 months later and we were married that summer. I mean, it's an interesting thing. And I think for a lot of the people in your community, and we've talked about this with you, Brenda, in our coaching sessions, is that the world right now, I think a lot of us who are seeking, you know, whether it be spirituality, want to grow our business, personal development, it's so important. It's critical. Find your tribe. Find the people who hold you to the version of yourself that you know in your heart you want to be. Because people pick up on energy. They know who you are. They know who you want to be. And I think Deborah, from the very beginning, she saw my gold, even places I couldn't see my gold. She saw the things that I knew I aspired to be, and she held me to those things. And I think that all of us in community right now, the world is really looking for demonstrations of community. Community begins when we can be vulnerable, we can be open, we can be real, we can be authentic. Vulnerability is the birthplace of humanity. And the best relationships happen in our most human self, the most basic, hard, beautiful, honest things that every human struggles with and aspires to be. Find someone, find a group, find a person, find someone who holds you to that. You know, I think that we were talking about this before we joined you today, Brendan, and we have rituals every single day that are absolute non-negotiables. We walk together every morning. We never miss a morning. And that's really, really something that people say, well, that's just, what, a walk? Are you kidding me? That is the beginning of our day. We are walking together. We hold hands. We talk stories, or we're completely quiet. But I think that's it's a demonstration of us really setting the foundation for our day together. We work together all day long. Our walk is not business. Our walk is husband and wife. Our walk is a partnership. Our walk is us loving each other, being out in the outdoors, taking in a beautiful Colorado morning. It's not about business. It's about our marriage, it's about our partnership, it's about our love affair. But that morning is so critical to how everything works in our life.
That's good. Deborah, what other rituals do you guys have as a married couple that you find builds up the relationship?
I just did a quick piggyback on what he said about kind of the predictability of that walk. And not to say that, because we do work together a lot in business and just getting out in the fresh air and moving your bodies, that sparks energy and ideas. So we do, it is a great place for us to sometimes brainstorm. And I think that that level of predictability is just so important. The other ritual would be dinner. So, and we've also talked about our love of Jeopardy with you, Brendan. So in the past, you know, we've had times where we're eating dinner in front of a Jeopardy and we decide, you know, and then we're like, okay, this is just so silly when we can record Jeopardy and eat dinner at our table, connect, and then fast forward through the commercials at Jeopardy after. And so that's just cool. And we've always prioritized the family dinner table as a ritual and, you know, lighting some candles, saying a blessing, doing gratitudes. So those are our biggest rituals, I would say. And then the weekend, like hikes and that kind of thing.
I think one other one too, we have a same rhythm. We're in bed early. We get up early. There's a level of predictability there. And as you look at the research on circadian rhythm, you know, Brendan, consistency for an individual is tremendous for all kinds of things, for mental health, physical well-being, productivity, creativity. But there's a lot of science that says when you have a partnership who also carries the same circadian rhythm or aligns in those same rhythms, it's going to help you to have a different relationship with how physiologically and emotionally you connect. So it's, I think there's a lot of things that we do together that really help our relationship to work. And we've naturally kind of melded into these things that we really do believe make us have this predictability in our life.
But I'll add, I think that also stems from childhood of unpredictability and not knowing
Absolutely.
What was happening that afternoon, that evening, or, you know, with being kids of divorced parents, like was the other parent going to show up on time, or was this other parent going to overdrink that night? So having predictability became such a priority as we were growing up, and you could predict your workouts and, you know, working on that individually, that it kind of was a natural part of the relationship, is having that
Honey,
predictability.
Sweetheart, that is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Brendan, I really want that to land for people. Yeah. A lot
can
of us
you
have
say
these
that again, just so it really sinks in.
Well, mostly it stems from if you have a childhood of unpredictability, like whether or not the person that you most relied on was going to show up for you, what you never knew what the household was going to be when you showed up, if there was going to be fights and violence, or if someone was going to be drunk, or someone, I knew when I would be picked up from school, like, was there beer in the dashboard? You know, like, that's how I could know kind of, okay, well, this evening is going to be unpredictable, right? I'm going to have to take care of myself and my needs and do what I know will bring me peace. So I think as much as you can keep predictability, and that's not to say that we don't love spontaneity, because I also think that's important in relationships. And so I'd say spontaneity comes in the form of dates for us. We don't have to like predict date night unless we're scheduling with friends. And so obviously you want a date on the calendar, but we do love spontaneity of like, hey, let's go hike this. Oh, hey, let's go to this dinner. But the predictability is, I think, what keeps the engines rolling, really humming.
James, talk about that a little bit from your perspective of how healthy consistency is good for your marriage, but also healthy novelty. And, you know, because Deborah, your example with the beer, that's uncertainty, but that's obviously kind of dysfunctional uncertainty. My friend Mark and I, we talk a lot about how when we go surfing and you have a 7-foot wave coming at you, okay, you get your juices flowing, that's uncertainty, but a better uncertainty than being down in Mexico popping pills in a, you know, back room.
Yeah, I think just to kind of riff on what Deborah was saying, and also what you just said about you and Mark, Brendan, is that I think that, you know, novelty is wonderful. Novelty in relationship is really wonderful. But I think what's really important is that there's a foundation of trust and predictability in how people who grow up in uncertainty, or even in a world right now, I mean, you look, we leave our house, Brendan, every single day, right? As entrepreneurs, we wake up with uncertainty. That's just part of being an entrepreneur. And you better learn eventually, if not faster than eventually, that predictability as an entrepreneur, predictability in a marriage and a relationship, predictability with your self-care is the foundation of everything great. Because there's a great saying about how it is that structural discipline in your life. When I work with people I coach with, patients I've worked with, we talk about emotional discipline and then structural discipline. Structural discipline is making sure that you map out a day where you have placed in your day predictable, non-negotiable self-care, self-love practices that will reinforce physiologically and emotionally and spiritually when the predictability of the world isn't kind, that predictability of who you are transcends that. That is such an important distinction for entrepreneurs. And oh gosh, who's not in the world right now? If you have an iPhone, if you are out in the world right now is unkind. It's hard. It's really, really hard right now. And I think spiritually speaking, the best thing you can do for yourself is create rituals in your day that allow you to land, allow you to have your parasympathetic nervous system to be regulated well enough. So when something comes up that you didn't expect, something hard, something unfortunate, you don't completely break. You don't completely come unraveled. The beauty of, I think, predictability is placing it in your life in such a way that when the unpredictable happens, you predictably know within yourself or within your partnership, that person has you. You've got it. No one's going to get this and take it away from you, no matter what happens. And the more I learn, I just turned 60, Brendan, and the thing I think I really appreciate about being 60 is the wisdom of self-awareness is a continuous practice of self-acknowledgement and compassion. You get a chance every single day to be a witness of what it is that makes you come alive. And then you follow through by loving yourself to actually practice those things. That is a predictable practice that I think everyone, whether you're 25, 55, or 70, get to know who you are and what makes you come alive, and then strategically, structurally put those into your day and never, never miss those dates with yourself, because those dates with yourself will allow you to show up in the dates with the people that you love whole as a person that you want to be around and a person who reflects back to you what's possible when love is the currency that puts you together.
That's good. That's good. Take notes, guys. This is free. We're not charging for this. Take notes. What was I going to ask you? Oh, I was going to say, you know, it's funny that you guys mentioned skipping the Jeopardy commercials because you guys don't need any of that stuff. It's all like ointments and things.
Oh my God. It's all pharmaceutical.
It's usually on memory, right, Brendan? It's like, you're going, I can't believe I didn't remember that. And then the commercial is something for your memory.
Commercial.
It's really good advertising.
I wanted to ask you, James, as kind of a follow-up to, you know, we're talking about things that we can do to heal or do more self-care. We've been talking a lot about kind of the mental, the spiritual, the personal, but obviously with both of you having kind of that background in sort of holistic health and wellness, is there anything that we can do physically or from a nutrition intake standpoint that will help us with self-care or personal development to show up better for a relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. Number one, keeping your blood sugar balanced, because we've had times when we don't remember in the past where you don't recognize that your partner is like cranky or they're reacting or acting out. And then you're like, oh, wait, they're just hungry. And so with that, balancing blood sugar is really about leading with protein, making sure you have plenty of fiber, dark green leafy vegetables. That's kind of, you know, keeping it clean, keeping low sugar, and then also balancing stress. So whether that's meditation, you know, supporting your adrenals with nutraceuticals, food, we think of magnesium, vitamin B5, vitamin B6, getting a healthy sleep routine, I think is essential. And then James would love to talk to everyone about cold plunging and sauna.
You know, and Brendan, I hope this is gold for everyone, because the more I'm learning about physiology, the more I'm learning about relationship, and I'm a student of this, man. I every single day, if you went in my bookshelf over here is just self-help. I don't have a nonfiction Everything in my life is
nonfiction.
I have no fiction in my world. And I think that's one of my addictions is
Me
that
too. I'm just looking at my books.
Everything I have is nonfiction.
Closest thing I have to fiction is I have Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey. And
well, that's
self-proclaim exaggerated. He said he took a triple Cuervo shot, but I think it was a double. So
you know, so I think one of the things that I'm really becoming super fond of is the research around doing hard things first. Finding something that you know is hard. Finding that something that takes you out of your comfort zone. I think all too often wake up in the morning and
no one wants to work out.
No, and I think a lot of us will lay in bed, we'll look at our phone, we'll scroll Instagram, whatever. While we're laying in bed, cortisol is rising. It's a stress hormone. And if we don't get up and give cortisol a job to do, we are marinating in cortisol. And cortisol at a higher level will knock down our serotonin. It'll knock down our dopamine. It'll create more and more anxiety. It'll create more and more reactivity and inflammation. So the hardest thing we can do, Brendan, first thing in the morning is get up out of bed and lean into something uncomfortable. So what I do first thing in the morning, I get up and I immediately lean into a cold plunge, or I lean into a Peloton, high intensity something. I lean into something that's going to give cortisol a job to do. And what I've really learned is that the intrinsic nature of doing something hard is that when you're done with that, because it's interesting how our schedule works, but I get up at 4 and I've got a pretty good workout done by 5:30. That's when Deb comes down the stairs she comes down the stairs and I'm kind of moving from Peloton and weights and cold plunge to go meditate. But you know what's beautiful? I'm a husband I'm proud of. When she walks through the door, I am so in love with seeing her come through the door. I am such a better man. I'm such a better partner. I'm kind. I'm open. I'm proud of myself. Not egotistically. I'm proud of who I am as a human. So when I meet her coming through the door, that's the version I want to be when she comes through the door. And I love that. Do something hard to soften your edges so when your partner comes through the door, metaphorically in real life, whatever it might be a person you're proud of. Be someone that you want to be seen by. And I think that's something that a lot of people in relationship, they move in together, maybe they're working together, they've been married for 20 years, whatever the case may be. You start to meld into this person, which may be beautiful, but it also may be soft and kind of too comfortable. Don't get too comfortable. Be someone you're proud of by maybe changing things up. So when your partner sees you, she goes, oh my God, my husband's awesome. Look what he does in the morning. So he is a better person when I see him. I know that may sound dramatic, but Brendan, I can't tell you how critical that is for making a relationship work. First thing in the morning, when you begin the foundation of when you're going to be together and how you're going to be together, get out of your own way early, do the hard things so you can be someone you want to be around. Mm-hmm.
Deborah, is that the same for you and kind of?
Yeah, no. Totally. Although, you know, I am coming from being upstairs, so I haven't worked out yet. So what typically happens is James also has had a little caffeine before his workout and he's all pumped up because he just like did hit training and weight. So he's like, hey, honey, how are you? Like,
high five, baby.
I'm just getting into my workout. So I was like, good, you know, how'd you sleep? I was like,
honey, tone it down.
Sometimes I'm not quite ready for all the energy, but it's still really good. But it's just funny. Like I'll meet him there, you know, an hour later, 45 minutes later. So it's pretty great because we laugh about it.
We do. And Brendan, because not everyone's in relationship in your community. This is a relationship with yourself too. Let's face it. You wake up in the morning and you go scrolling or you go watch the news or you just kind of, you know, drink a terrarium of coffee and start nailing emails. You're not going to want to be around yourself. You really need to know that all of this physiological opportunities that are happening every single morning with cortisol, with dopamine, with serotonin, you are a pharmacy that's open 24 hours a day and you get a chance to dictate what kind of medicine you're going to take. So make sure you are mindful of the medicine you want to take. And you have a lot to say about the medicine that you take and the person you want to be with all day long, because that's going to be between you and you, you and God, you and the universe. Make sure you're taking good medicine.
Yeah. I was just telling a friend yesterday about how when I was really making a push to grow my business and I was taking a lot more calls and a lot of sales calls, you know, I'm in the West Coast, I'm in Pacific time. So I would have guys that would be like, yeah, I can do 10 a.m. tomorrow for that follow-up call for me to close the deal, collect the money, put them in the system. And I'm like, oh, 10 a.m. Eastern, that's 7 for me. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. And I'm not as much of an early riser as you guys are. I'm usually waking up at 6:30 to 7, and then I'll do my morning routines and workouts and walk my dog and take the sun and everything from like 7 to 9. So 9, 9:30. Now 9:30 is the earliest I take my calls. And that's with my team, stand-ups, having fun also. But I was taking calls at 7 a.m., 8 a.m., and I would roll out of bed and you'd feel the cortisol. You'd feel your body needing and wanting to stretch and exercise and drink water. But no, I'm just brush my teeth, quick, get right into the call. And then you're in a stressful situation and environment right away.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I think we've normalized that, right, Brendan? A lot of people have normalized that. We wake up, and I used to share with my patients a lot. We wake up, we're too tired to keep running, but we're too scared to stop. So here we are in that place, and we start to give our power away to a schedule that we know isn't supporting us. We all have our rhythm, and we all know when we're on our game. And like you learned, like, oh my gosh, my game starts at 9:30 Pacific. And then you go into that call, you go into that meeting, go into that relationship whole, excited, ready, versus compromising right out of the gate. And, you know, I say to myself a lot that your mind will make a compromise that your soul never would.
Say that again. That's good.
Your mind will make a compromise that your soul never would.
And why is that?
Because your mind will do what it takes to overcome fear or support fear. Your soul sees right through it and will never give in to fear.
Yeah, it reminds me of this great Jim Carrey quote that I heard one time, which is he was talking about the difference between sadness and depression. He said, sadness is a feeling. It comes and goes. It's normal. You can't avoid all sadness. But depression is your soul telling your mind and your body, F you. I don't, yeah. This isn't who I am. I'm done trying to live like the way you're making me live.
Yeah.
And that hit me like a ton of bricks because it made me reassess everything that I was doing in my life that just didn't make sense at a heart level.
Yeah.
Brendan, I hope that lands for everyone.
Yeah.
Because I think right now, especially the unpredictability of the planet, the unpredictability and how entrepreneurs, we see so many images of people who look like they're killing it in life, right? They're just crushing everything. And then immediately we go into comparison, the thief of joy. And we find ourselves more and more leaving our own narrative and putting someone else's narrative, and we're grabbing their pen and writing their story in lieu of our own. That is a real insidious decline of self-awareness, self-esteem, confidence, love of self. And I think that's why I think it's so important to fortify your morning, like really bookend your morning, have something in the morning that predictably makes you feel really good about who you are, honoring your soul, honoring your mind, honoring your partnership. And have that be walled off. It's a non-negotiable. Nothing gets in before you've done your work. So you can go out in the world and do the thing you love to do from a foundation that has been built, fortified through following through over and over and over again. Our mind loves intentions. Our soul loves our follow through.
That's good. Deborah, what boundaries and rules would you recommend people do to prioritize themselves, their own self-care, and maybe even limitations around things like social media or other ways they might compare to other people?
I think when it comes first to relationship, and it's just great communication of, hey, so this is the time I need for myself and my self-care. I'm not available, you know, because this is me time. And I think me time is good in all kinds of relationships. Obviously, if you are at a job or an office setting, there are certain parameters and expectations. You can't just go up to your boss like, hey, from 1 to 2, that's me time. No, like you're on the clock. So that's a different story. But honestly, if I'm just being totally transparent, boundaries are really tough for me. Like the saying no, and actually setting boundaries isn't always a no. A boundary could be a yes because you always say no, right? So then you're like, oh, Now I'm going to allow myself to say yes. But for me, I'm really looking at that right now. And I think it's all about just being your authentic self in partnership, in friendships, in building your tribe. And the boundary is just not settling, right? It's like writing it down so you can constantly remind yourself, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not settling for that. This is what I want. It's claiming what you want and then putting a boundary around that and not letting anything in that isn't in alignment with that desire.
James, any thoughts on setting boundaries for self-care that you do?
Yeah, I think we make such a big deal about it. Like it's critical, right? You know, there's a beautiful saying that a great boundary allows me to love you and love me all at the same time. That's a great boundary, right? Mm-hmm. I'm whole, they're whole, the world's whole. And it's interesting, right? You get an opportunity every single day to sort of assess at the end of the day how it went. Where did you lose energy? Where did you gain energy? And you know, there's this really wonderful reflection. It's called self-recognition. It was a great research project where they basically asked people at the end of their day just to really look at the way in which they gave their energy away or did they receive energy? And what were the things they did throughout the day to have that happen? After 2 or 3 weeks, people really understood the rhythm of their day and how boundaries were really critical for them to really excel versus, if you will, at the end of the day, feel depleted, feel like you gave yourself away. And boundaries are something that are super individual and highly personal. But the most important thing to do is get to know them. So take the time to really get to know your rhythm, get to know the way in which you are. You know, I think all of us have our blends of introversion and extroversion. We're all blends of that. And also, I think in all relationships, you want someone who's going to pull forward the parts of you that you know are your most virtuous self. That's a boundary that people don't really give enough credence to. Every human being has virtues that make them be their best version. And you want to create boundaries in relationships, meaning that you bring people in who want that for you, who see that in you, who pull that out of you. Deborah has amazing virtues that are all about creativity and service and giving. My role is to make sure that I help in the boundary of our relationship, that those things get a chance to flourish. That's my role as a husband, as a partner. Help make that environment so her virtues will flourish.
That's good.
I think also that there's, you know, literal boundaries and figurative boundaries, right? So literal meaning like, okay, you're in relationship with someone and then a boundary may be like, I don't want you out past 10. Or for us, it may be, you can use the word like,
I don't want you out past 8.
Like a boundary like is pushing the edge of something. We don't do that in our relationship, so that it's not an issue. However, if we're scheduling a social plan, like I'm not going to start a social plan that starts at 8 p.m. when like we're normally going to bed 15 minutes later. So that's like pushing that's like a literal boundary. But Brendan, I wanted to ask the same of you because you mentioned already not taking calls, say before 9:30 your time, but where else have you seen that?
Yeah. I would say, you know, the way I really think about it is, an awesome guy grew up near me and came on my podcast very early on when I launched the show. His name's Jesse Itzler. He's married to Sarah.
I know Jesse.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome guy. I really love him. We're like brothers from another mother. You know, he's from Roslyn. I'm from Locust Valley. And, you know, when he went on Rogan asked him the same question. And Jesse said, well, Rogan really didn't even ask about boundaries. He's like, what's the one thing you do that totally changed your life? And this was Jesse's answer. He said, I started saying no to like everything, you know? And what would happen was people would say, you know, you'd get 100 emails a day. Hey, Jesse, you know, it's your best friend from this. And, you know, I got this new investment idea and I'd love to sit down. And Jesse would be like, no, no. And they're like, no, 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 no. You don't understand. It's just 15 minutes. We're going to do it. It's just 15. And Jesse said, no, I'm not going to do it. And then, no, I'm not asking for money. I just want to get your ideas on it. It's just 10 minutes. And through that, and when I was emailing Jesse to set up the pod, I mean, we would DM on Instagram just kind of one-on-one. But when we were setting up the podcast, his email inbox was, you could tell he had nothing to do with it. It was some other woman who was just like a complete gatekeeper around that, which I appreciate. And so I think for me, it's kind of the same thing. You know, I have people asking me all the time because San Diego hotels and real estate is super expensive. So everyone who I've ever met in my entire life wants to stay at my house when they're in San Diego. You know, everybody wants to get some free coach. I mean, I had a woman on LinkedIn one time reach out. Hey, you know, I see, you know, you do this. I'd love to just kind of run this business thing by you and get your advice. Sure, yeah, just book a call with my team. We can get you set up. No. I just want your advice, just one session. I don't have a budget to pay anything. Yeah, I know I don't do that anymore. It's, you know, I can't with my time. And so it's just really learning how to do that effectively and kindly. And I think it's not being this like dark behemoth saying no kind of aggressively or trying to hurt someone, but kind of how you said it, James, it's how can I serve them and myself? So I serve myself by saying, coming up with a compromise, which can also be helpful to them. So, oh yeah, happy to give you some consulting on that. Here's what that would look like. I'll charge you some money, et cetera. And then maybe they, through me modeling that, will stop violating their own boundaries when other people are trying to pull too much. And the other thing I'll say about boundaries is, you just said it, James, is knowing your boundaries going into the situation. Most people have challenges setting boundaries for two reasons. One, they have a hard time saying no to people and navigating the emotions and the reactions and the people pleasing. That's kind of the obvious thing. But I think the less obvious one is people just don't decide in advance what their rules are, right? So let's say they go to a party and they don't have a boundary around how much they're going to drink or what time they're going to leave or what they're going to do or these types of things. And then what happens is it becomes very hard to set boundaries when you don't even really know what your rules are. I did a video breaking down a Bill Belichick press conference on my YouTube channel. He's the coach of the New England Patriots. And they were trying to ask him all these questions about Antonio Brown, this very controversial wide receiver at the time. And, you know, they always try to get a rise out of the guys, especially, you know, Belichick, who's stoic and totally unemotional. They're trying to get him all pissed off. And Belichick I do an analysis and I break it down kind of frame by frame. And he just had the boundary set before going into the meeting that he was absolutely not going to answer any questions related to Antonio Brown whatsoever. You knew he had an airtight boundary around that line of conversation. So the reporter asks about this. He goes, no, we're not talking about that today. If you have any questions on the game against Miami, happy to answer that. And the guy's like, well, you didn't answer my question. And Belichick's like, no, I already did. Oh, no, you didn't. I already did. And then the guy keeps going, and then Belichick's like, all right, conference is over, and just walks right out. And it's all over. Like, so it's just knowing in advance, like, what is your boundary, I think is really helpful to setting it.
Brendan, yeah. I hope that lands again for everyone, because bright lines, right? It's often called bright lines. Like, when you look at the way you lead your life, you have to have bright lines, knowing that these are non-negotiables for you. And you want to set up your life, relationships, business, anything that happens in your world with bright lines. So you don't get yourself in a place where you overstepped into a place you know is not your best place. Go into a relationship where you know you're making a compromise around integrity or your character or your values. Bright lines are the way that you have peace in your life. It is one of the most powerful practices to give you predictable peace in your life. And to a lot of people, they think bright lines means that, well, there goes the spontaneity. There goes all the joie de vivre of life. No way. That's how it happens predictably in life. Great spontaneity, awesome joie de vivre, amazing love. All of that happens when your bright lines are placed, because that is self-preservation. That is protecting your soul, so your soul can explore within a very beautiful environment everything that makes it feel good, and never ask it to go into places that you know is where you know you never do good, where you always give yourself away and you always wish you stayed where you knew you were at your best.
Well, and let's just agree that it's not easy, right? Like, the number of times that you're out, it's happened to us in the grocery store, at church, with friends, at a party, wherever, where if you're in the service or coaching industry, There's just some people that don't see the bright lines, or they don't recognize, oh, we're in a social setting or a party, but I'm going to take the time to ask you about my digestive issues, or ask for some free coaching, or my menopause, what I should do. And it's like, oh, it's so tough sometimes to be like, oh, you know what? Why don't you go on my site and schedule a 15-minute consultation? We'll see if I would, if we would be a good fit to work together. And that is a great response, but it's sometimes still so surprising that, you know, I don't know.
One of my favorite episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David spinoff from Seinfeld, is when he accidentally trips Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal, when he's sitting courtside at the Laker game. But before I think that scene happens in that episode, Larry's got this mole, he's got something on his back, and he's got to make a doctor's appointment and go in and go through the whole rigmarole. And he really just wants someone to look at it and just tell him it's nothing. And so he's in the changing room of their country club or something. And Jeff Green, Larry's manager, says, oh, look, that's the LA Lakers doctor over there. And Larry goes, great, I'm just going to ask him, you know, just, he can just look, what, 5 seconds. He can just save me 3 hours of driving downtown. So he goes up to the guy and he goes, hey, can you just look at this thing on my back? And the guy's like, look, I'm really busy. It'll take you 2 seconds. You'll see me at a doctor's appointment. Guy goes, no, and Larry keeps pushing. Finally, the doctor looks at Larry. He goes, hey, what do you do for a living? And Larry goes, I'm a writer. And the doctor goes, cool. Why don't you write me a bunch of free crap? And then you see how it feels. And then just walks out.
Perfect.
It's like the Seinfeld episode where, like, he's dating the massage.
The masseuse, right? The masseuse.
Going
hey, come on. You know, do you want to have dinner?
I had a client in New York. He was my physical therapist, and then we became friends, and I was coaching him also. And he Jewish guy, and he would go to his synagogue, and at the synagogue people would come up to him and ask him all these things. And I remember one guy said to him, and the main thing honestly I was coaching him on was no more Mr. Nice Guy and boundaries and all these things. And he had a guy say, hey, can you come over after service and just stretch me out? And the guy was like, yeah, no, just make an appointment, come into the office. No, just 15 minutes. And so it was cool, because basically what happened in that situation that happens a lot of times with boundaries is the guy got very angry at him. I thought we were friends, and he stormed off. And then the next day he booked an appointment and apologized. And so that's an example of how, you know, when you set that boundary, it can actually be a healthy experience for the other person to see what that looks like.
Yeah. So. And I think you gain respect in that type of situation, and also in relationship, you know, without naming names, we'll just say, like, we had someone very close to us was in a long-term relationship where his partner she was 100% available all the time, didn't really have friends, didn't ever have her own thing going on. So it never, like, set a boundary like, hey, I'm not going to be available this night, I'm going to do a girls' night, or that I'm going to use me time for this. And there was a loss of respect, I would say, loss of appreciation, just because that other person didn't set any boundaries. He just kind of went off in every direction because he could, because there was no boundary there, you know, to set a precedent like, oh, I'm important too, like I need to take care of myself. And then the other partner was like, oh, they set a boundary, oh, I respect that more. So I think when you, like the case of your friend, the physical therapist, like, he gained so much more respect, even though the person didn't have a pleasant reaction in the moment. And we've been in that situation a lot, like you just described. And it sometimes that comes with age, right? Like just learning, or just over the years, like, oh, I recognize this person, I need to say no, or I need to just redirect them. And, honestly, it's still working on that with having friends that I treat as patients, and they'll have to say, by the way, you still need to charge me for that appointment. And I was like, oh yeah. So I get, you know, It's boundaries are big.
Yeah. Oh, we can. I was gonna say we could do a whole episode on boundaries. Yeah, we already. I already have. I had Sarah Gilman on my show. She wrote the book "Transforming Your Boundaries." She gave a TED talk on boundaries. We talked about a lot with Dr. Robert Glover, author of No More Mr. Nice Guy, who came on the show. So, yeah, I'm with you. But kind of as we sort of start to wrap up here, getting back on talking about kind of marriage and relationships, both from sort of mental, spiritual, but also the nutritional and wellness side of things. James, is there anything else you feel like you want to add that might help complete our episode today, that either around your marriage, advice, preparing for marriage, any of these types of things?
Yeah, I think that it's going to sound, well, of course, but I think don't dismiss this, everyone, like, well, of course. I think that every single day we get a chance to do an assessment of where we are with our self-care, where we are with representing and demonstrating our values, where we are in all the relationships to the way in which we want our life to be seen and experienced by us, first and foremost. And if we don't do that work before a relationship, before intimacy, it certainly is going to be wicked hard to do it when you're in a relationship. And I think for everyone, you know, personal growth, spirituality, the whole thing, it is all going to come down to self-awareness, self-compassion, and self-acceptance. Those are the three keys to having all those things be understood. And then the heroic thing is following through on what it is that you see and what you're learning. We can intellectualize all of these things, but until we actually own them, really, really come to terms with them, really, really understand what it is they're going to do for us, how they're going to teach us, how they're going to make us better, how they're going to help to improve who we are as a person, what we contribute to our relationships and to the way we'd love our life to be. So I think those three things, every single day, do an assessment of your awareness, your acceptance, and your compassion. Because I think compassion is an interesting part of relationship that people, it sometimes kind of falls away, Brendan. You get into relationship, you've been at it for a few years, you're kind of feeling like it's going okay. Self-compassion is interesting because it kind of opens you up to deeper inquiry of where you have more opportunity to grow and where you have more opportunity to serve. People don't often see that experience so well, but self-compassion is, I think, the way in which common humanity happens. So we see each other in our compassion. We all have days of insecurity. We all have days when we feel bigger than life. We all have days when we're sad, when we're broken. And if we can have compassion for ourselves, that we can show up in those relationships knowing, so does my partner. She has days when she has anxiety. She has days when she feels broken. She has days when she feels amazing. I need to have that own understanding for myself so I can be with her in those times too. Because that is, talk about a spiritual bond. That's the deepest place it really happens. Great sex, great businesses, great fun out in the world only happens when there's a great understanding of the depth of what happens to have those experiences happen. And that's where compassion and acceptance happens. That is so important to make it all happen.
Yeah, I mean, if the listeners only listened to the last 3 minutes of this episode, I mean, that might have been the most important thing that was said today, honestly. Man, lands on me. And in this world, like you said, James, the world we live in, man, the standards, the pressure, the heights that we don't need. We don't need to make all this money. It's the desire, all from a place generally of feeling unworthy and putting the standards on ourselves.
And it's interesting because self-compassion is the antidote to unworthiness.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah. Right. And the fuel that you pour on the fire of the unworthiness is the striving and the perfectionism and the overachievement, which leads to the burnout and the overwhelm and the pain. And then you get to the highest point of the mountain when you're all alone and you have all your money and all your riches, but you sacrificed everything, including your relationships. It kind of reminds me of during Christmas, we watched the Scrooge. I saw a musical called Twisted, which our church puts on, and it's all about, you know, the story, the Christmas Carol. You know, he just gave it all up for money.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, that was good. Awesome. Well, guys, this is there's a lot of value here. This is an episode to listen to a couple times at least. This is super so much value. We covered so many different things. And James, Deborah, I really appreciate you guys coming on the show. Where can people find you if they want to work with you, James, or Deborah, or buy some of the cool things that you are affiliated with? Because I know everything that you touch is turns to gold. So how can people learn more about all these things that you're involved with?
Well, for James, we each have our own website. So drjamesrouse.com, just drjamesrouse.com. I have drdeborahrouse.com. And we both have, you can schedule with either one of us on our own sites. And then James has created some amazing products through a Sensitiva brand, which is, what is the website?
SensitivaUSA.com. I'm very interested in functional mushrooms, relationship to physical and mental emotional well-being. So we have a line of functional mushrooms.
Skincare. And use,
yeah, I mean,
morning,
listen,
day, night.
We're just channeling ADD, Brendan. We're just channeling ADD. We love creating products. But more than anything, we want you to know, I mean, we've known you now for several months. You're family to us, Brendan. We love you. We love your service orientation and how you do your business. And I think that's why you're so wildly successful. You have really understood that you're alive to the degree that you serve. I tell my patients every day, you are alive to the degree that you serve. People really, really know when they engage with you, when they see one of your podcasts, when they're in part of your community, your drug of choice is service. And it's a beautiful thing that you have chosen this, that you found your thing. And we've just been so blessed to be in your environment, to be circulating in your universe. And so thank you for having us
on. Thank you, for sure.
And thanks for just giving us.
I appreciate it, man. I think the takeaway from kind of my service is just saying yes. You know, I remember when I felt really kind of called to do this, and I was working at a hedge fund in New York, and this guy came into my office, and I thought about kind of bringing him in as business partner or number two guy to help me with this. And I mapped it all out, and I had my Instagram and all the stuff. And he just looked at me and he was like, yeah, there's no money in this. And he left. And I was like, it's not about the money. It's about saying yes. And and the crazy thing is, in the end, you know, I make so much more than I did even working at a hedge fund, but it's not even about that. It's just the blessings that you receive when you say yes, which obviously there are some are financial, but I think the best thing that I get to do is obviously connect with people like you guys, build relationships. I mean, the holidays just came around. When you talk about family, I mean, I got your guys' Christmas card with a printed out thing in the middle with pictures of your kids and family. And I have a book signed by one of my dear friends and former clients. I have multiple books signed, you know, and so that's kind of the coolest part about it, is that we get to connect. And I'm excited for you guys to come out to San Diego and vice versa for me to come to you so we can surf. Which
yeah, we also will have a few retreats this year, and we would love for you to join us.
Oh, I'm in. Just tell me when and where, and we'll fly in, see if we can get Garrison to come.
Yeah, Brendan, my team as well. Just words of the wise, pickleball flies a lot farther at 8,000 feet where we live in Colorado,
yeah,
Rockies.
Right.
So you're going to have to kind of temper your zeal.
Well, hey, guys. On that note, I actually need to go run up to Oceanside to play in a game. But thanks again for coming on the show, and I'll see you guys again soon.
All right.
Thanks for having us. Love and blessings, everyone.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Brendan Burns Show. If it's your first time here, please make sure to subscribe on the Apple Podcasts app or in Spotify. Also, please leave us a rating or written review. This helps others learn about the show and spread the word to new and more people. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.